Welcome to episode 17 of the She's Off Script podcast. Today, we're kicking off a three-episode series on the business of travel influence. We learn from the experiences of three women at three different stages in life that have built successful travel empires. For the first time on this podcast, we'll be releasing three episodes in one day. So don't forget to check out episodes 17, 18, and 19 to hear from all three women. But before we dive in, I would love it if you would head over to Instagram and share a screenshot of this episode on your stories and let me know your favorite gems from all three episodes. Tag me at She's Off Script and add the She's Off Script hashtag so I can share on my stories as well. Okay, let's dive into today's episode.
When Forbes wrote an article, when Condé Nast wrote an article, then people were willing to share.
First up, we're speaking to Jessica Nabongo, also known as the Catch Me If You Can. Jessica is on a mission to be the first Black woman to travel to every country in the world. In 2018, she took 250 flights and flew almost 230,000 miles and is currently on country 151 of 195.
And my manager was like, you don't know what you're doing. You're too young. I was 23. I had a very lucrative job. I didn't get laid off when they laid off 20,000 people. And here I was quitting this job, and it was going into the economic downturn.
We had such a candid conversation about how she struggled with the decision to take the leap into entrepreneurship, what she's had to sacrifice to get where she is today, mental health, as well as her relationship with other Black influencers, and so much more.
I am fiercely protective of my brand. I'm fiercely protective of the things that I do and who I align myself with. And I think that's why I've been successful.
Stay with us as we go off script with travel influencer and CEO of Jet Black, Jessica Nabongo. Jessica Nabongo, welcome to She's Off Script. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Of course, it's great to have you. I've been a longtime admirer. But for anyone who hasn't come across your beautiful Instagram page or seen all the press you've gotten, could you tell us who Jessica Nabongo, aka the Catch Me If You Can, is?
I'm just a woman who is out here trying to live her best life. And honestly, what I'm doing and what I have done over the last few years is essentially I've created the life that I wanted to live and I'm living it.
And I love that you're doing that. And that's what we want to dig into today is how can we do what you're doing? It looks like you're on one constant vacation, but I know there's a lot more that goes into that. Could you share a bit about what led you down the path of leaving a stable six-figure income to then teach in Japan and then ultimately become a digital nomad? And I think first, for anyone who doesn't know what a digital nomad is, perhaps you could also share that with us.
So this is a term, I don't know who coined this term, digital nomad, but it's essentially people who are making money while traveling. I think that's the point. Some people are living in the same country for extended periods of time. Some people are country hopping. But it's literally people whose office is their laptop. And I definitely fall into that category. But how did I get here? I think, you know, as the daughter of Ugandan immigrants, I think a lot of people who are first generation American can relate that we are raised with, you know, our parents impress upon us educational excellence. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but going for stable careers, whether that's engineering, medicine, law. I didn't do any of those. So I was already a Black sheep. I wanted, straight out of high school, I wanted to go to FIT in New York because I was really into fashion. And my mother told me fashion is a hobby.
Oh.
And so our compromise was I was like, yeah, I'll go to a regular university. I graduated from St. John's University in Queens. And, but I said, I'm going to study what I want to study. And I studied English literature, which, you know, it's like English literature.
Right. What are you going to do with that?
Right. Exactly. What are you going to do? And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was like, look, high school was, you know, a struggle for a number of reasons. And so in college, I said, look, I'm going to just do what I want to do. I always loved writing and I always loved reading. And so that's what led me to just focusing on English literature. Fast forward, I was very active on campus and I ended up joining a program called En-ROADS. Mm-hmm. And I wound up actually, upon graduation, I ended up working for a pharmaceutical company doing pharmaceutical sales. which was a very lucrative career. And I was working in Metro Detroit. I bought this beautiful two-bedroom, two-bath condo on the riverfront. I could see Canada from my window.
Living the life.
So right. I was vacationing in Miami and New York and Paris and London. And, you know, disposable income was aplenty. I had lots of shoes. I would go shopping every weekend at like Neiman's. And I was not happy. So, you know, I had this life that everyone, you know, aspires to or says, this is what you want to do. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy. And, you know, there were a series of events that took place, but it ended up in me one day leaving work and going home and Googling teaching jobs in Japan. So I had a friend who was living in Japan at the time. I had always been interested in Japanese culture. I had been interested in the linguistics of Japanese because there's some similarities with Lugendo, which is my parents' native tongue. And so I was like, Japan, that sounds cool. And so I applied for a job and I got it.
Oh, okay.
Quit my job. And it was crazy because my company laid off 20,000 people and I didn't get laid off. And when my manager called me, I was so disappointed. And he's like, oh, I don't think you understood correctly. You didn't get laid off. And I was like, yeah.
But I wanted to be laid off.
Right? Because I wanted the check. I wanted the payout. And so I actually quit. Like, I think like after the layoffs, maybe I quit like a month later. And my manager was like, you don't know what you're doing. You're young. Because I think at that time, I was 23. So I had a very lucrative job. I didn't get laid off when they laid off 20,000 people. And here I was quitting this job and it was going into the economic downturn.
Right.
I mean, you know how bad it was going to get because this was February 2008.
Right.
But we all knew you don't leave a lucrative job. But for me, I was too unhappy to care. And so I left. And my family was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I want to know. As the child of an African immigrant myself, I want to know, what did they say?
They were just like, what are you doing? My father passed by then, but my mom and my mom's brothers, like, because on top of that, I shaved my head. So they're really like, what is going on? My uncle was like, you look like a boy. I was like, oh my God, leave me alone. And I went, and it was scary at first because I had never been to Asia. I had done my fair bit of travel with my family. I think by that point I had been to like 8 countries and maybe 1 or 2 territories. But I'd never been to Asia. And so the first time I went to Asia was when I was moving. And I remember getting on the plane and no one looked like me. And I'm like, wow, this is about to be my life for the next year. And I landed in Japan, you know? And so it was a really interesting experience in the beginning. And I was definitely a little bit depressed, but ended up having the best year of my life.
Oh, wow. Honestly. Prior to launching your boutique travel firm, which we'll get into later on, I get the impression that you felt pulled between the world of entrepreneurship and working for a traditional organization or a corporation, like, you know, you work for the UN and USAID. So could you share how ultimately you decided to go the entrepreneurial route?
Yeah, it's funny because I always joke and I'm like, I'll never be an entrepreneur. I don't have a hustle bone in my body. All I know is like how to succeed in school and in traditional workspaces. And so I think for me, it came to a head. I lived abroad for 7 years and then I moved to DC and was working for a consulting firm through which I was working for USAID. And I was so unhappy. It was the first time I'd ever worked in an American office space. Because before, with the pharmaceutical company, we go to doctor's offices. We didn't have an office.
Right.
It was the first time I worked in a cubicle. And it was horrendous. And also, that was fall of 2014. So socially, America was just being upended with police violence against Black people. In Ferguson, I remember sitting in my living room with my roommate, who was a very good friend of mine, Anthony. He's from Detroit as well. We went to middle school and high school together. And I remember sitting in our living room and watching the prosecutor from Ferguson tell us that they weren't even going to take the case to trial. And I just remember becoming so depressed and just feeling so hopeless about the country that I had just returned to. And those feelings persisted. And during that year, I just knew, I was like, I can't do this, period. Like, I simply cannot. It's either like, it's stay here and do this and die, or like figure something else out. Mm-hmm. And so summer of 2015, a friend of mine was engaged, and which I found out, well, I knew, but in April I saw him at a show. And, you know, I said to him like, oh, you and your wife, you guys should honeymoon somewhere in Africa because, you know, you're a prominent figure. And I just felt like you can help to change the narrative. And he was like, well, plan it. And I'm like, okay. So I planned this honeymoon for him, not even thinking about starting a business. And I did it and it was great. And he said it was like the best trip of his life. And then, yeah, that's really how Jet Black started. And the reason I started Jet Black was to focus on tourism in Africa, Central and South America, and the Caribbean. Because I really feel like so many of those countries deserve more love than they get.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of, yeah, like Thailand is always on the list of most visited destinations, and like France and the UK. And I just really feel like there's so many gems outside of Asia and Europe that deserve to be discovered. And I wanted to build a company that would focus on changing the narrative around a lot of those
countries. I couldn't agree more. I'm curious though, when you tell people what you do today, do they still look at you sideways? Or do you find that people are more knowledgeable of the portfolio style career that you've built for yourself?
I think after I got CNN, my mom finally got on board with what I was doing. Before I was home, I was like, I have an interview. She's like, for what job? I'm like, no, ma. Like, no. Because like my family, I don't come from a family of entrepreneurs. I come from a family of like, my grandfather back in Uganda was the president of a coffee company. You know, my father was an analytical chemist. My mother retired now. She was a registered nurse. Her brothers are all accountants. Like, that's the type of family I come from. So, you know, it was like, what are you doing? But once I got CNN, they were like, okay, now everybody in my family is on board. But the thing of what do you do? I hate this question. And it's because I'm living life in a very different way than what people are used to. So when people ask me, what do you do? I'm like, well, you know, I'm just traveling. Because I don't really ask people what they do unless we really, really have gotten deep into conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not a question that I ask in the beginning because what does that mean? Like, you want to know how I earn my money? Why does it matter to you how I earn my money? To me, I'm like, get to know me as a person and just move from there. But who cares about what anyone does? I despise this question. So I always answer with a very like, I'm just traveling. I don't usually tell people, even like now with this goal of becoming the first Black woman to travel to every country, I don't even lead with that. Because I'm very big on people just getting to know me as I am without any.
I will tell you, we are interested in a little bit of that. So with a slightly different spin. So we'll get into that. I have to say, you said CNN was one of the turning points for you where your family finally thought, oh, she's doing something legitimate. So I love how well you promote yourself. I think you've made a very good business of it. Could you help us understand how you've gone about getting that press and maybe any tips you can share for people who are looking to do something similar?
So first, let me say this. I don't go out for press. Press comes to me.
Wow. That's
CNN, great. Actually. Yeah. CNN is the only outlet that I pitch ever. And I've been featured in Forbes multiple times, Condé Nast Traveler, Bloomberg multiple times, Huffington Post a couple of times, multiple outlets. CNN is the only one that I ever pitched. And that was because I was looking for an outlet to announce my journey. And they didn't end up being the announcing outlet, but it ended up working out anyway. So let's go back to Jet Black for a little bit. So when I launched Jet Black, you know, a big thing was getting a logo, obviously coming up with a name, getting a website going, and coming up with a brand look and feel and a brand messaging. Those things are so incredibly important when you're developing a brand, and also just how you present yourself online. So then once Jet Black had become quite successful. I would say it was successful. We were able to create a large following on Instagram. We were able to sell out our trip and we had a number of private clients. So we were doing quite well. And then after building Jet Black, I decided I wanted to pivot and focus on building a personal brand. Mm-hmm. Then I already had my blog, The Catch Me If You Can. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really writing that much anymore, but I decided to pivot, to change my handle to The Catch Me If You Can so that everything matched with regard to my personal brand. Mm-hmm. And you know, some people will say, well, you should use your name. So that's definitely a decision that people have to make. But the biggest thing I think is making sure that you create messaging and a brand identity. Mm-hmm. So my brand identity for my personal brand is it's bright colors, right? It's a pop of color on the lip. It's the pattern dresses that I wear. It's, you know, everything on my page, it's just bright and alive mm-hmm. and whatever. And then also I always speak with my authentic voice. And I always say to people, because people are like, oh my gosh, you're so real. And thank you for your honesty. I'm like, I'm so busy. I don't have the energy to be somebody else.
Right.
You know, like I literally
say that
do
again.
Not have time for energy.
Say that again.
Like, this is all you're going to get. You either love it or leave it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Because I, you know, number one, you're never going to please everybody. Mm-hmm. But when you do find people who aren't interested in what you're doing, engage with them, build your community. I think about building a brand in today's world is so much about building a community. And by that, I mean building your social following, engaging with your community, making sure that people know what they're going to get from you. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important. And I think for me, obviously, I'm an artist, I'm a photographer, I'm a writer. So aesthetically, for me, obviously, my photography has to be top notch, because that's really important.
Right.
But I think, you know, it's putting your best foot forward. And the fact of the matter is, people do look you up on social, mm-hmm. no matter if it's related to what they want to do with you or not. People do look you up on
social.
It's
one of the first things I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, when people reach out to me and they DM me or whatever, I look at their social, mm-hmm. especially if they want to do business with me. I'm like, how are you representing yourself online?
Right.
And a lot of times we don't align, because I'm not interested in aligning my brand with the way you represent yourself online. Mm. And some people take that to be harsh. I don't ever say that. I just tell people I'm not interested in this opportunity, or it's not a good fit. Mm. And sometimes people get upset, but it's like, it's just not a good fit. Like, everything isn't going to be a good fit. It isn't about someone thinking they're better than you or anything like that. For me, everything is about energy. Mm-hmm. My energy has to be aligned with the energy of people that I work with. Even with press, I don't do everything that people invite me to do. I don't have time. And so for me, a lot of times it's about the energy that I feel mm-hmm. in what I'm doing. And I think in building a brand, a personal brand, and building a business, you have to do the work first.
Right.
You can't reach out to someone and you're like, hey, I'm launching something, can you be a part of it? No. No, I can't be a part of it. No, I'm not going to like help you for free launch your thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just not doing it. Now, if you come to me and you've done the work and you've built a following and you have like a good presence online and I align myself with the way you're representing yourself, I will help you, hands down. I help a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But you can't come to me and you've not done the work.
So how did you learn to be so protective of yourself and your brand? Were you bitten once and it really taught you a lesson, or is this how you've always been?
No, I think this is how I've always been. I've always strived for excellence. I've always strived for the best. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, some of my goals that I tell people are like, what, really? You're gonna? Yes, I am. Why wouldn't I? I mean, we can talk about that online. But, things will be revealed mm-hmm. as the months go on this year. But I've always strived for the best and literally nothing less. Nothing less is acceptable for me. And that's the way that I think I've been most of my life. And so it can be off-putting to people because people are like, well, why don't you want to work together? And it's hard to tell someone because you're mediocre and I don't want to work with mediocre people. And not in a mean way, but it's just like, you have to figure out what you want for your life.
Right.
And you have to be fiercely protective of it. And I am. I am fiercely protective of my brand. I'm fiercely protective of the things that I do and who I align myself with. And I think that's why I've been successful.
I love that. I think a lot of people starting out probably grasp at everything that comes their way just because they want to get that exposure, not knowing that in the long run, it probably is going to hurt you because the portfolio of things you've done kind of speaks to the caliber of brand that you want to have. So good for you. And I really wish more people would take that stance earlier on.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, the caliber of brand that you want to have. Mm-hmm. There are a variation in calibers. Mm-hmm. And some people can be very successful. I have friends who I am cheering on every single day. I'm not their target audience. You know, what they do does not speak to me.
Right.
But I can recognize that they've built an amazing brand for some people. And it is a beautiful thing to watch. That doesn't make me part of your target audience because it's just like, it's just different. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think when it comes to freelance life and influencers and all of that, and the people you meet, you can still support people even if you're not part of their target market. You can still support your friends. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there is crossover, right? So there's some people's stuff that I promote. Am I super into it? No, but I recognize that there's value in it for other people. Mm-hmm. And I think people just have to be, I have my convictions in life and I don't veer very far from them. If you meet people who know me, they're like, nah, like if Jessica doesn't want to do something, Jessica will not do it, period. There's no convincing. It's like, she's just not going to do it.
Amazing. Speaking of people reaching out to you, have you found that you're mentoring more and more people as you get more experienced into this world?
No, I wouldn't say, because like, honestly, maybe I am mentoring people. And I'm not meaning to, but like to take on a full on mentee, I have not done yet. Mm-hmm. But like, for example, there's a woman working with me now, Anna. She does all of my logistics. And just because we speak on a daily basis, like, for example, she was interviewing for a job and just the way she was talking, I'm like, no, you need to shift your verbiage. Like, if you want this job, then you need to say, I already have it. And, you know, just little things like that. So in that way, people in my life sort of get to learn from me, not because I'm mentoring them, but just because like I want the best for everyone around me. Mm-hmm. Another friend of mine, Melissa, she owns a company called The Lip Bar, and we live in the same building in Detroit. And so whenever we're home, we like kind of bounce ideas off of each other. And, you know, now I'm like, okay, you have to, you know, focus on your personal brand. Mm-hmm. And so then we end up talking about that and talk for hours about strategy and what we can do. And so it's not that she's signed up for me to mentor her, but it's just that I'm like, hey, you're a good friend of mine. This is an opportunity for you. Let me help you based on this success that I've had.
I love that. I think oftentimes, sometimes women of color rise and then they isolate themselves, or for some reason, they don't feel like they can come back to their community and really leverage them or help someone up. So how do you think about putting together a circle of women around yourselves that are probably at the same level and have a lot to share with you so that you can all rise together? How do you think about that?
So I think it's super necessary because in particular, this influencer space, one thing, travel is another thing, entrepreneurship is another thing. And it helps to have people around you who understand what you're doing.
Right.
That's not necessarily your closest friends who you grew up with, right? So a lot of my friends who are part of my inner circle, if you will, are newer friends because we're operating in the same space. And there's a few women who are just so open and helpful, and like Lovey Ajayi, she is incredible. Like she has lent herself to so many people. And I can say to me as well, if I text her and I'm like, hey, can I get 15 minutes of your time? I just want to bounce some questions off of you because I'm, you know, like in terms of her journey, I'm following behind her in terms of a number of things that she's done. She's always made herself available for me. Gloria Tamo from Glow Graphics is her handle, the blog abroad, I think. She is amazing. And we share voice notes on WhatsApp all the time, just going back and forth with bouncing ideas and her giving me advice and, you know, vice versa. And so I have cultivated this group of successful women who I can bounce ideas off of and who can do the same with me. And they're all women of color. And it's been incredible. Some of us have like a little group chat. Mm-hmm. There's a few other women that I'm in a little group chat with. But I just think, because a lot of people ask me, what is it like in the Black influencer space? Is it catty? And I'm like, I don't really know that life. There are some people who are like that, but that's people who have bad energy, who feel a certain type of way about themselves and they feel threatened.
Right.
But people who are confident and successful have no problem helping other people. Mm-hmm. They have no problem. And it doesn't matter how many followers you have or anything like that. A girl reached out to me, doesn't have a ton of followers, but she's going to be working with the Four Seasons because of the issue that I had with Four Seasons. Mm. And so I'm telling her, like, I'm coaching her. I'm like, look, you got to kill it. Because they're waiting for us to fail. Mm. So whatever I can do to help you do great at this collaboration, I'm going to do it because it's going to, like, I need to make sure she's successful. I don't care how many followers she has. I need to make sure that she is successful at what she's doing because that is going to set the stage for other people who come behind mm-hmm. her.
That's amazing that you've done that. And actually, speaking of Lovey, I know her and Bozoma St. John are all in this West African Voltron. And I've heard her say something very interesting where people ask, can we join it? And they say, start where you are. Start with the people you're coming up with. And so what advice do you have about the approach to take to cultivate that core group of people around you?
I think start with doing the work. Mm. Don't go out seeking and trying to latch yourself onto people who are successful already. Mm. Don't do that because no one is going to be interested in supporting you. But if you show that you've done the work, mm-hmm. then people are like, oh, okay. Okay, I see what you're doing. You know, I have a friend, and it's so funny because, like, basically, when I announced that I wanted to be the first Black woman to travel to every country in the world, I made this little video, and I was like texting my friends, like, "Can you post it? Can you post it?" And a lot of people didn't, and I was like,
"Interesting how friends don't seem to be the ones to help sometimes."
Yeah, but when Forbes wrote an article, when Condé Nast wrote an article, then people were willing to share. And so, I mean, it kind of like, it hurt a little bit because I'm like, really, guys? But, it, you know, people want to see you get that stamp, mm-hmm. right? Which, you know, there's a give and take. But yeah, there's definitely a give and take because it's like, oh, you can't support me until you see like this major outlet.
Right. It shouldn't matter. You know me. We're friends.
You know me.
Right.
But the thing is, like, that for some people is the proof in the pudding, you know, mm-hmm. whereas for me, I'm like, but you know me, you know, I'm on point, you know what I'm about, but you need to see that. I mean, and whatever, that's just human nature, right? Because mm-hmm. I always knew this would happen.
I love right? that and confidence. I love it.
Seriously. And so much of it is like visualizing it, mm-hmm. accepting it and living it.
Right.
And I have a friend, Jermaine Cole, also known as J. Cole. And this is someone I've known. We've known each other since 2003. And I've watched him rise. I've watched his star soar. And I'm like always so proud of him wow. and what he's doing. I've seen the pivots he's taken in his career mm-hmm. when he needed to pivot. And, you know, and his pivots have always led him to further success, even when people thought they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But, and I think he is also, he's also a model of being true to yourself. Because who he was in the beginning of his public career is not who he is now. And now he is his authentic self and he's having way more success than he ever had before. But anyway, I bring him up because in talking to him, you know, I go and I'm like, you're selling out arenas, dude. Like, this is insane.
Yes, he is.
And,
yeah.
you know, and like, and I'm like, how did you get here? Mm-hmm. We were together in Nigeria because he was doing a show there. And we have these conversations. And he said, I could always see it. And I think that when I read a lot of books on that talk to successful people, mm-hmm. it is about visualizing it and feeling it and realizing this is actually who you're supposed to be. A lot of people just can't see it or feel it mm-hmm. and therefore it's not for them. But you have to just see it and know that it's for you right. and it's going to happen.
That's amazing. I really appreciate you laying it out like that just because if you come from a background where the external voices are like, what are you doing? Where is this going to take you? It's difficult to develop that inner voice that takes you to the next level. So it's important to hear other people vocalize what it is they say to themselves. So hopefully we can also start practicing how to say that to ourselves as well. I know we went on a little bit of a tangent there, but it was necessary. Thank you for that. So kind of bringing it back to the personal brand and building that. So now for people who want to go that route, could you help us understand what are the sources of revenue that you have coming in? Because I don't know that you can just put your picture on Instagram and there you're making a six-figure salary. So how are you doing that for yourself?
I feel like I have less money than I've ever had in my life right now, but people think I have more money than I've ever had in my life. So it's a very interesting.
Because you look like you were living that life. And right. So bring it home for us. Paint that picture for us.
So I think my life is less expensive than everyone thinks, first of all. But so I have revenue coming in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. So I still have Jet Black. It's been shrunk down significantly, which has not been helpful because obviously income has gone down, but that's because I'm hyper-focused on my current mission. Mm-hmm. But that will be expanding again once I'm done. So I have income coming in from Jet Black. I'm still a writer, so I still write articles for different outlets from time to time.
Interesting.
I'm an influencer, so obviously I do brand collaborations based on my social platform. What else do I do? Maybe that's it. Is that it right now? That's it right now. And then, I mean, like, for in terms of the journey and how it's supported, a lot of hotels comp me, my space, because obviously I promote them. I have a lot of people who've donated. Almost 500 people have donated to my journey, and that has been such a significant help for me.
I saw that, and I love how you also name them if they want to be named and thank them for being involved in your journey. And so we certainly want to give everyone at the end of this episode a chance to support you. So hope we can give us some more details on that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So pivoting a little bit more just to the personal side of things, as if asking you how you make your money wasn't personal enough. So you talked about feeling like a zombie coming into Somaliland from Dubai, traveling all over the world at the pace at which you've been going. It must take a toll on you physically and mentally. So what do you do to take care of yourself so you can make that goal you've set for yourself?
I drink a lot of water. Mm-hmm. I mind my business, which is more helpful than you know. I try to stay positive. You know, I've dealt with mental health issues. I've been like a very negative person. And what I know now, after everything that's happened in these 34 years of life, is that positive energy will carry you through.
AKA minding your own business.
And, you know, like, it really, I block people on my Instagram because I don't need your negativity. A lot of people are like, oh my God, don't go to South Sudan because it's dangerous. Don't go here. Don't go there. And I'm like, don't offload your negativity onto me. I'm not interested in it. So for me, creating positive energy, making sure that I'm in contact with my friends who are like high vibration friends, people who also are, very positive. That's a huge part of my self-care, knowing who to reach out to when I need to. But even like the positivity, I said on my Instagram, I coat my stomach with positivity as well. I've never had food poisoning. Mm. I've been to 151 countries and I eat in dodgy places. But I'm like, I want to try food.
I have a story that I will not share about eating food on the street. Oh my goodness.
Look, I eat it all the time.
Give me your tips about how to survive eating street food.
Be positive. Be positive. Like, I never look at it and I'm like, this might be. Well, no, we were in Eritrea and definitely I drank this water and I was like, I don't think I should have drank that water. But I was okay. But literally, I think positivity can seriously, it's a protective shield. Mm. So that's a big thing. I joke about the water, but seriously, hydrating, drinking water is so important. Reducing your intake of sugar is super important in terms of like maintaining your immune system. Mm-hmm. Sugar does begin to break down your immune system depending on the quantity you're intaking. I take vitamin C. I don't sleep enough for sure.
I was going to ask, that's so vital. How do you get the right amount of sleep?
it's really difficult, especially when I'm abroad, right, because so many of my clients are in the US. Mm. So I find myself going to sleep early around like 9:30, but then I'm up at 2:30 working because of the time difference. And I've got to just stop.
No, I can definitely relate, because I mentioned earlier that I was also in Nairobi in December, and I thought, oh, vacation, I'm not going to work as much. But yes, clients are in the US. So here I was working until 5 a.m. and then, oh no, we actually have a plan to go out on safari today. So you have to be awake for that too in local time. It's tough to balance sometimes.
It is. And then other than that, like in terms of the travel last year, I took 150 flights, 230,000 miles almost. You know, I have lounge access. Mm-hmm. I take advantage of that. I enjoy being comfortable when I travel. Yes. When I can, I upgrade my flight only for free. I never pay to upgrade my flight. But because I travel so much, I have so many perks from the travel. But, you know, like I'm 34. Like I don't stay in hostels. Mm. I don't take super crappy flights and sit in middle seats to save money.
Amen.
Because I also have to survive, right? Like my body needs to physically survive. So I figured out how to travel in a way where my body can survive it.
I know. My husband would say, you're just so bougie. But I'm like, listen, it takes a toll. Well, that's good to hear that you are mindful of that, because that is quite a pace to keep up. Now, also, you mentioned that at 30, you moved back to the U.S. or got more of a base in the U.S. just because you felt like you were missing out on personal and family milestones. So what else do you think you've had to sacrifice in order to get where you are right now? Oh, no, don't cry.
Bae, where's Bae?
Oh, yes. You know, that's something I'm curious about, that pressure from you know who to have kids and grandkids.
The entire Ugandan massive, like my mom's friend, one of my mom's closest friends. I was FaceTiming my mom from Nairobi. And so Seychelles is my last country. And like my whole, like all my friends and family, my parents' friends, everyone knows and everyone hopefully is coming. And so I FaceTime my mom from Nairobi. She's with my Aunt Jeannie. It's one of her best friends. She's Kenyan actually. And she's like, yes, we're super excited. We're so excited to come. She's like, but there needs to be a man there with you. And I was like, oh my God. And one of my aunts who's in Uganda, my dad's sister, I'm her heir. And like, I remember we spoke a couple months ago. We hadn't spoken in a long time. And we're on the phone for like 20 minutes. No lie, 16 minutes of it was like about, we say, like, where's my, like, where's the husband or whatever? And I'm just like, oh my gosh. So, you know, and I mean, honestly, for me, I want a partner. I'm actively searching.
Okay, you can find me at the kitchen. Put out the word.
Right. But I read a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot. And one thing people say is you have to work hard at everything that you want. Mm-hmm. So actually yesterday I put on my calendar an hour for being on dating app.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying. Yeah. So Raya and Hinge are probably my favorite. And so I'm trying.
I won't feel bad, but I don't know what they are, but I guess I should.
I don't think you're married forever.
I've heard of Tinder because everyone always talks about it, but you know.
So these are like a little more curated. These platforms are a little more curated. So yeah, I'm trying. I think it's obviously with my lifestyle, men don't want to give me a chance.
Oh no, don't say that. Someone is out there.
Someone's out there. So yeah, I mean, I feel like in 2019, I have to use Tinder more when I travel. I'm on that. But yeah, you know, it's something I'm actively working at.
Anything else you felt like you've had to sacrifice in order to keep up this lifestyle?
Relationships in general, not just like romantic relationships, but my friendships. Like I've watched some of my friends, people I've introduced, become really close over time. And I'm not as close to them because I'm not around, right? Like, yeah, I live in Detroit. I'm only here 20% of the year. So I see some friends when I'm here. But yeah, it's really difficult to maintain very strong friendships when you're not living in the same city, when you can't see each other. You know, a lot of my closest friends, I only see them twice a year. Wow. That's not a lot.
Yeah.
And it is hard to maintain relationships across time zone. I try. There are people who I'm still pretty close to, but yeah, I think that I've lost closeness in a significant portion of my relationships. My niece and nephews. I have one niece, three nephews. You know, I missed a lot. I missed most of their birthdays. And it's funny because one of my nephews, every time he would see a plane, he's like, is that Auntie?
Oh, she's coming to see us.
But it's not me. It's just the plane. So, you know, like, you know, but the thing is getting them involved, like they see articles about me. Mm-hmm. They know kind of what I'm doing. So that's helpful. And when I can, I try to see them. But I've definitely sacrificed relationships through all of this.
But it sounds like you're making the time you do spend with people count, right?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And that's the thing. People know me. Like, if you're a close friend, I'm going to move mountains to get to you. Even though I feel like more people can move mountains to get to me. I do that. Like, I go and I see my friends. Mm-hmm. When people have babies, I try to show up when I can. Mm-hmm. And my friends know that about me. No one can question that. No matter what, I'm going to try and be there for my friends. And if I'm given enough time, I put it on my schedule and I'll stop. I'll come back to the state. Even when I should be somewhere else traveling, I'll come back to the state mm-hmm. to make sure that I'm there for my friends.
That's amazing. I know you said you have a lot in the works. What's next for you, your brand, other than the quest that you're on?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I guess what can you share with us about what's next?
Yeah, I think, you know, you may see me in the digital videos. You may see a documentary. You may see me on TV. You may read a book that I've written. There are so many possibilities. There's, as you can imagine, there's so many things in the works. And I have a really amazing team that I'm working with at CAA now. And yeah, we just, you know, once contracts are signed, and those agencies decide to promote it, then I think everything will be revealed.
We're here for it, and we can't wait for the announcements just because we see you putting in that work. But of course, I can't let you go without getting a little bit into the travel side of things. So what are the top 5 tips you have for women that are looking to get into the solo travel life?
First things first is I say chase the deal, not the destination. Mm. In particular, if you're coming from the U.S. or Europe, you can find a lot of really great deals to travel to foreign countries. So instead of like focusing on, I want to go to this place, if you're just interested in exploring the world, wait for that flight deal. And when you get that flight deal, just buy it. Like, I just saw a flight deal from New York to Paris for like $230 on like a regular airline. So first tip is chase the deal, not the destination. Second tip is when you're going out for solo travel, make sure you're picking a place where you feel confident. Because when you're confident and you're walking through the streets with confidence, then you're not going to be vulnerable. And that's really important. And I think to get to confident, you need to be comfortable. So pick a destination where you know that you're going to be comfortable. You're not going to be like, you know, having anxiety and looking around scared. That's important. So definitely look for a place of comfort to lead to confidence to reduce vulnerability. That's true. For me, generally, if I'm traveling solo, I tend to prefer to stay in hotels just because I like the comfort of having 24-hour security, concierge, things of that nature. I think hostels are a great option for people who are interested in that. You can just look at all of the reviews. And I think you can definitely find something that suits you. And that's a great way if you're traveling solo to meet other people, whereas it can be more difficult staying in a hotel. I also think Airbnbs are great. Look for super hosts if you're traveling alone. That's what I always recommend. That's 3. Number four, I would say just do it. Like, get past fear. The world is not as scary as everyone wants us to believe it is. So definitely just do it. Get out, get past fear, and just go. You said solo travel, so no need to say, stop waiting on your friends to do it. Just go and do it. And number 5, I would say just cherish the journey. And, you know, journal. I write gratitude lists every morning when I remember. But I do write it pretty often. But just like really cherish the journey and cherish everything that you're doing. You won't always be single. You won't always be able to travel solo. I have a friend who is so sure that her boyfriend is going to be proposing soon, my friend Serena. And so she texted me. She was so frantic. She was like, oh my God, I need to do a solo trip soon because I think he's going to propose and I have to get it done. And so, you know, you're not always going to have that chance to travel solo. And she's done it several times now and it's important for her. And so I would say, like, cherish those memories of doing it on your own.
Thank you. And, taking you back to where you started this journey, I think 2 years ago now, you had had a conversation with a friend in Bali. You said, I want Oprah to interview me. Has that happened yet?
No, but I am confident that it's going to happen. I have taken all of my energy and my visualization, and I am very confident that it will happen in 2019.
Well, we're watching for it, but while you're still waiting for that to happen, what's the biggest opportunity that you feel has come your way because you've gone down this path?
Honestly, I think it's the press. Because, you know, getting to do podcasts with outlets like a Condé Nast Traveler, right? Or a Bloomberg. They have largely white audiences, right? And I think what I bring to the table is that I'm showing people the world through an African lens, which is something we rarely see. We're seeing a rise in African photographers, things of that nature. But there aren't that many African storytellers. And I think having access to press has been the best part. To be on a Bloomberg podcast and talk about how amazing traveling to Sudan is. And it's the same with Condé Nast. I'm able to talk so much about my passion around traveling on the African continent. And I think that has been the best part of this. Like, really growing my Instagram because that makes people pay more attention. Right. But really having access to these mainstream news outlets to start to change the narrative about not only places that people can travel to, but also about Black travelers in general, and to create space for me and people that look like
me. Well, with that, for anyone who is now intrigued and wants to follow your journey, could you let everyone know where they can find you and also how they can support your journey?
Thank you. So you can find me everywhere on the internet at The Catch Me If You Can. And if you are interested in supporting with $5 or $100, you can support at thecatchmeifyoucan.com/support.
Perfect. Jessica, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you just came back from somewhere and probably need your rest, but we appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thank you. This is really fun.
I'm so glad you made it to the end of today's episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and write us a review. As always, don't forget to share this episode with your friends, family, colleagues, anyone who cares to listen. We'll talk to you next time.